this is the last Sunday of August and the last sermon in my four-part series from the Psalms. I don't know how you've enjoyed that series, but I'm ready to be done with it. Preaching the Psalms is hard. It's really hard. It pushes us into places that challenge us, into places that reveal our vulnerabilities, places that extend and express the faith that we seek. The one on the first Sunday in August was God's steadfast love endures forever from Psalm 107. Then God shines forth from Psalm 50. Then God gives justice from Psalm 82. And this morning, God rescues us from Psalm 71. Each sermon has been based on a central idea from the particular psalm, but then reframed as a question. This morning's question, God rescues us, is based on verses 2 and 4 of Psalm 71. In your righteousness, deliver and rescue me, and rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and the cruel. So we might start by thinking about what the psalmist means by the word rescue. The word translated from Hebrew as rescue is sometimes translated as deliver. And in that case, it means something like to snatch up or to take away. At another place, the word translated as rescue means to cause to escape. Rescue me. Snatch me away. Let me escape from something that threatens me. As I think about that kind of rescue, my first thought is about the psalmist asking God to rescue him or deliver him from danger, maybe physical danger. But what this psalm is talking about is not just rescue from an ordinary kind of danger or rescue from hardship. It's rescue from unrighteousness. It's rescue from wickedness. And that's a little bit different. And maybe even a little more uncommon to talk about than talking about rescue from physical danger or rescue from hardship. Because for most of us, rescue begins with things that are physical in nature, maybe even accidental threats, rather than rescue from wickedness. For example, I think about my childhood experience of coming close to drowning in the deep end of the swimming pool at a family reunion. I was a small child at the time, and I got into danger because I was big enough to be allowed to walk around by myself, but I wasn't old enough to understand that swimming is something you have to learn to do, not something that wearing swim trunks magically empowers you to do. On what was an otherwise lazy kind of afternoon, everything suddenly seemed to happen so quickly. I jumped into the deep end of the pool, and when the adults realized after a moment or two what had happened, probably alerted by my mother's sudden scream when she realized I had disappeared from view, everyone scrambled into action, with my father, who was farthest away, arriving to rescue me first, to snatch me from danger. It's kind of a scary thing to think about, the possibility of drowning in a swimming pool. Scary, especially for anyone who has a curious or a fearless small child. But it's also a reassuring story. Child in danger, parents come to the rescue, child saved, lesson learned. The water hadn't reached out to grab me. I innocently jumped in. It's frightening for sure, a story like that, but it's not dark. But this psalm, I think, is talking about a different kind of rescue, a rescue not from a dangerous situation or an innocent mistake, but rescue from something that might be actively trying to bring harm. Maybe from someone who is actively trying to do harm. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the cruel and the unjust. more frightening from my perspective than the dangers of random occurrences or natural disasters or poor decisions or curiosity run amok or risky behaviors or unexpected accidents or anything like that are the dangers of deliberate harm. Rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and the cruel. What is wickedness? I would say that it is the act or even the intention of doing deliberate harm. It's trying to hurt someone else. It's not the kid who jumps into the deep end. It's the situation where someone pushes someone else into the deep end. Brethren put this under the heading of doing violence to someone else. That's what we understand to be wickedness. And that includes not only acts of physical violence or threat of physical violence, but it also includes acts of abuse or humiliation or fear-mongering or injustice or cruelty. In fact, those last two are right there in verse 4. Rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and the cruel. We'd like to think that most bad things that happen are the results of mistakes or misunderstandings, the results of inattentiveness or poor judgment. But that may not be the case. In fact, there are times when it probably isn't the case. There are plenty of people out there, I am afraid, who are willing to push someone else into the deep end, who actively seek to do harm. So that's the difference. When I jumped into the deep end and was rescued by my father, along with the support and concern of all the relatives who rushed to action, there was no residue left over from that. But had I been pushed in, it would have been a different story. Rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and the cruel. So our question for today, God rescues us, snatches us from danger, saves us from the grasp of the wicked. What do you think about that? I'll tell you what I think, or maybe I should say I'll confess what I think. I'm not sure that's the way I experience God. As if I'm walking along the edge of the deep end or near a cliff or along a busy street and someone comes along who's ready to push me into danger, whether literally or metaphorically, but somehow God intervenes, snatching me out of danger at the very last moment. God rescues us, snatches us from danger. I was reading another translation of the psalm and looking at verse 4 in particular, and something struck me. The verse that I had read in the New Revised Standard Version offered as, "Rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and the cruel," was instead translated this way, "My God, free me from the hand of the wicked, from the grip of the wicked and the violent." My God, free me from the hand of the wicked, from the grip of the wicked and the violent. I read that and I thought, what if what I need more than rescue from wickedness, in the sense of someone snatching me from harm's way at the very last moment, perhaps, is some means to find freedom from wickedness, some way to become free from the grip of wickedness. My God, free me from the hand of the wicked, from the grip of the wicked and the violent. God rescues us. How about this question? God offers us freedom. If I make that tiny shift from being rescued to being freed, I think maybe I'm getting closer to not only what I need, but also to what I sense God is doing in my life. Because if rescue is more than just being magically removed from a situation, snatched away, but is instead a movement toward empowerment, a move toward freedom, not just snatched away, but opened up, released, then I'm closer to what is both emotionally and theologically more helpful to me. Think of it this way. If the wicked are those who wish to do harm to me, to do violence to me, then what I need most is a way out, a way to step out of harm's way, a way to break those bonds and move forward freely. The wickedness directed at me may be personal, or it may be impersonal. It may be violence of any sort, some of it violence invisible to the physical world. It may be the toxicity of the political language of the day, or the ways in which others' assumptions about what is acceptable has begun to erode my own convictions about what is acceptable or unacceptable, what is good and bad. But whatever it is, I need some way. I need some help. Or maybe I just even need some encouragement to step out of it, to find a new place to stand. I don't think I need God to swoop down and snatch me up and take me to some heavenly or magical place where all the struggles of the world are gone and forgotten. I think I need God to unlock the lock, whatever that is, to open the barred door and to show me the way to walk out into the light of this wondrous world. I need God to give me the courage to face fears, the conviction to stand up to wickedness, the strength to face oppression, the determination to resist the ways of violence, determination to resist, not to respond in kind. God rescues us? Yes. I think God rescues us, not so much by snatching us out of danger in the moment, but by giving us a vision of freedom, giving us a renewed commitment to nonviolence, giving us the endurance we need to seek justice, giving us a way to regain our balance when someone gives us a shove in the back. Rescue me, O God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and the cruel. Over the years, I've appreciated Kathleen Norris's book, Amazing Grace, A Vocabulary of Faith, a book in which she takes biblical and religious words like belief, incarnation, idolatry, grace, worship, and others, and she writes essays about her understandings of these words. One of the words she addresses in the book is the word salvation. And I've mentioned that particular essay before, but my mind traveled back to it this week as I was thinking about rescue and then thinking about freedom. The story she tells is the story of a young man who sleeps over at her house after Norris's husband, who works at a bar, brings the man home at the end of the evening because the young man's in no condition to drive. Anyway, he sleeps on the couch. And in the morning at the breakfast table, the young man is in a talkative mood. He's full of stories. Most of them are of the rough and tumble variety. Stories about his work in various oil fields. And then stories about getting involved in drug dealing. He tells Morris that it seemed to him that things were going fine at that point. He had money, he was building a network of contacts, everything was fine, he thought, until one day the guy he was in business with saw someone driving the other way down the road and reached under a seat for a gun that he did not know was there. The young man did not know was there under the seat of the car. And he said in an offhand way that he needed to kill the person that they'd just seen, but then decided not to follow through with it at that moment since there was someone else in the other car with the other person. The young man confesses to Norris at the breakfast table, "It was right then that I decided to get out. I was over my head." Norris writes in her essay then about the word salvation in the Hebrew Bible literally meaning to make wide or to make sufficient, as in a road wide enough to sustain life, a path sufficient to lead to something other than death. She also notes that the primary word translated as salvation in both the Hebrew and Greek scriptures is non-religious. The Hebrew word translated as the word salvation is most often a word used in a military context, and the Greek word is most often a word used to describe physical healing or physical relief. She notes that intuitively this seems right to her, that salvation in both the Hebrew scriptures and in the New Testament should so often refer to a physical situation, because she says that's how most of us first experience salvation, being saved in a physical sense. Only later, she writes, do the more spiritual implications of salvation begin to make themselves known. But then here's the part of what she writes that perhaps my subconscious mind remembered as I felt myself nudged to revisit her essay this past week after thinking about rescue and freedom. Norris writes, having turned suddenly from the path he was on, our friend seemed a bit lost, but also glad that he had been able to name something as wrong and to walk away from it. He had tasted a kind of freedom in that, and he wasn't sure what to do about it except to tell the story. He felt good, but kind of uneasy, unsure of what to do next. I could have said this to him then, but accepting salvation is never easy. She continues, the Israelites, having been led by Moses out of Egypt, began complaining as soon as they hit the desert. They said to Moses, quote, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us, bringing us out of Egypt? What God had done, of course, was to set them free from what had long held them in bondage. But they, as any of us might, began longing for the devil they knew rather than face the unknown road ahead. She concludes, I could not have spoken of this then. I hadn't been to church in many years and barely remembered the Bible stories I had absorbed as a child. Standing at the window, buttering two pieces of homemade bread, I glimpsed my neighbors walking to church. All I said was, well, Willie, I think you did the right thing. God rescues us? Yes, of course. God does again what God has always done. As Norris writes of the Israelites, what God had done, of course, was to set them free from what had long held them in bondage. That is the same story into which Willie stumbles as well. Having turned suddenly from the path he was on, our friend seemed a bit lost, but also glad that he had been able to name something as wrong and to walk away from it. He had tasted a kind of freedom. Rescue is the door swung wide open to freedom. The opportunity given to walk a wider path. Perhaps a path that is still unknown, but a wider path, one that can sustain our steps. God rescues us as God offers us another way of living. Amen.